All right, our agenda is here. Marcus, you said you will scribe. R&T. Dave Lane is going to join us shortly. Nicholas sent his regrets. Greg, you said that you had one thing that you wanted to add to the agenda. Do you want to do that in the beginning, or towards the middle, or towards the end?
It was. I think it's probably a little more in depth, so we can put that off. It's just one.
Okay.
It was issue 110, time allowing.
Okay, any other updates or changes to the agenda before we start?
We could start with the ones that are almost resolved. So just to
Okay.
get some stuff done in the beginning.
96 and 97.
Yeah.
Okay, so 96 to 97. Let's go ahead and start with 96. So, there we go. So 96. And I believe you and Dave Longley resolved this, Greg, on the issue tracker.
Yeah, the thing was, as it was originally formulated, framing always returned an array of objects, and each object had the context embedded, and that didn't make sense to me, or Marcus, and it wasn't consistent with what we described for compaction. So it was changed to use a graph element. It's always in an array form that contains the results without having the context embedded.
Let's see. Okay, so is Marcus's proposal good then? So let me go ahead and put the proposal in there. Let me read it first. The Marcus's proposal is the result of framing must be an object with a context and a graph property. The value of graph is always an array containing zero or more results. Or is that different from what you just said, Greg?
No, I think that's consistent.
Okay. Okay. And then, let's see, so that's good. I'll go ahead and just put that in the issue, since you're scribing,
Already did
Marcus.
that.
Oh, okay. You're done. You okay. Scribing and handling issues today, and jet lagged.
Yeah, let's see how long that goes. Good.
And then 97, I guess, is up next.
Yeah, this was, let's see. I think this had to do with some questions about dealing with the default values in frames, where null needed to be preserved. And that was a problem because, of course, null is removed when you compact. So the solution, which is implemented in the spec right now, is that we actually use a preserve keyword that's a key for an object with a null keyword or some other things. And that ends up getting flattened and the null gets turned back into a null after compaction is complete, and that allows it to maintain the semantics that David initially set out. So I just closed the issue because it was moot.
Which are replace post-processing. All right, I'm just going to put that in there just so we've got a something on record in case the RDFWG complains. Okay, so that's 96 and 97. Let's jump back to the first item that we had on here, which was issue 80.
Do we need to enter a resolution or a...
I just went ahead and put resolved since we can expand it a bit. I'll expand.
Oh, okay.
It
I'm sorry. I'm behind. Yeah.
No, no, it's fine. I'll expand upon that a bit when I clean up the minutes. Just say that the implementers already found a solution and implemented it, and we're happy with it. So we'll do that. Issue 80, removing the initial context from the API spec. There's a link there. So I had proposed something, but Greg, you made it clear that proposal is not going to be that's not going to work, right? Let's see, because we disallow redefining keywords. Well, wait a second.
Well, Mark has pointed out that if we rely upon initial definitions and we're going to allow other semantics to be added to type and graph, say, for saying that they can take container, then which would have the result of redefining the keyword and therefore removing what was in the initial context. So relying upon the initial context for setting that is problematic.
Hmm.
Now, I still think it would be useful to say, for instance, that type has a container set, so that we always get that form back when compacting, if that's what we if that's what the author wants. But perhaps putting them in the initial context isn't the way to do that. I still think it'd be we never have considered other uses of the initial context, for instance, defining default prefixes, which
So one of the mistakes that we made in RDFA is not providing some kind of initial context for languages, meaning that we could have gotten around a lot of backwards compatibility issues by having processor flags, meaning that your processor is put into a specific mode based on the initial context that it uses. So, for example, things like a version flag or something like a, you know, you could even have like a linting flag or a use RDFA 1.0 flag, or, you know, basically just having flags to override the default 1.0 behavior of the processor. And I think that's something that we could use for the initial context, right? So we could tell people that the initial context in JSON-LD 1.0 is blank, but the reason that it exists is so that in the future processing modes could be injected into it to either add new functionality or modify the way that the processor acts when it looks at JSON. So, for example, in the future, we may not want to drop undefined terms from compact and expand and normalize. And in that future, we would say, oh, well, the initial context has this value in it, which will enable that feature. Does that make sense?
I don't see how that really helps backwards compatibility, though, because unless you have specified those flags in advance, then how can an existing processor affect its behavior based upon the presence of that?
You would, you mean an existing, right. It wouldn't necessarily be an existing, well, you could look at it two ways. One of them is that these processors are never done and the processors are going to be updated in the future, and so you always specify what the initial context is for a processor. And right now, there's nothing that you can really specify in it, but you specify a blank initial context to the processor. But in the future, we might pass different flags in, and in the future, those processors will read the new values out of that. I realize that it's not a full solution for backwards compatibility, but it's better than not having an initial context where you can change the processor mode. Does that make sense? I mean, the other argument is, well, you could just have the API take that flag and not worry about an initial context. So I guess what I'm getting at is, it doesn't seem like we have anything to put in the initial context right now, right? So the argument could be...
Well, we have potentially prefix definitions. I mean, of them, XSD is the one that is used the most frequently when doing
mm-hmm.
data typing.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue that putting others in there would also make a lot of stuff work.
Right. So I guess the question then is whether or not we believe that we should put XSD in there. And then if that's the case, then does RDF also go in there? And then, you know, what's the list that goes in there? But
well,
we went
through this process for RDFA, so.
Right, right.
It seems to me it's the same argument set.
Right, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's the same thing. I mean, JSON-LD is slightly different from RDFA, right? I mean, JSON-LD, we actually do go out and fetch documents from the web to pull in a context, whereas RDFA, the decision was we're not going to do that. So we could say with JSON-LD that there is an initial context and it exists at this location. And then we can have the discussion of what we put in the initial context at a later time. Or we could make the decision that there is no initial context. Marcus, I don't know what your position on the initial context is right now. Do you feel like we should have an initial context or if we should not?
I would say we should not.
Okay.
First of all, it doesn't bring us anything. It just makes JSON-LD more complex, as well as the processors. And I don't see that it will help in any way for backwards compatibility. So I don't really understand how you see that working. And I also don't like the idea of putting prefixes in there, because that then ends up in, well, probably a versioning mess sooner or later, because some processors have that prefix defined, others have not.
Well, they would always have it defined. If the initial context is a must, every processor must implement it.
Yeah, but not if
that's
we
the
have
argument for having
new
one.
Versions of JSON-LD. Sorry.
Well, it's interesting to note that that HTML5 plus RDFA has an initial context which is empty, but other host languages have different initial contexts which are not empty. They're not necessarily empty. So having the principle of having a context that is loaded, even if it's empty, has value, because that means that any processor that implements that will automatically pick up these environmental things. We don't have to worry about compatibility issues because of different processor implementations.
Well, also keep in mind that JSON-LD isn't meant to be integrated into a host language, right? I mean, JSON-LD is a kind of a language by itself. So the thought that we're going to have different initial contexts is probably not, it's just not going to happen, I don't think. I guess the concern here is that if we don't specify initial, there's one thing that I disagree with you on, Marcus, and that is that it wouldn't be useful for authors, right? So if I'm authoring a JSON-LD document and I want to do any kind of type conversion whatsoever, like XSD decimal or XSD integer, I'm going to have to open the prefix.cc site, type in XSD, copy the URL, and dump it into my JSON-LD every single time I want to, because I can't remember that URL.
That's
it's really, really
not
long.
Entirely true, I would say. We could as well specify that kind of initial context somewhere on jsonld.org or on w3c.org and just reference it. And then I would be able to look at it. But otherwise, I would have to look at the source code of the processor to find out what's actually defined in there.
So you're saying that people should do at context and then http://w3.org/. context/base or something like that? Or JSON-L, do you want to?
Well, we just host such a prefix list somewhere if you really need it, and then we will see if people even use that. I don't expect
right.
people to use it anyway, but at least we don't kind of pollute all the processors and all everything out there and rely on those prefixes, where most of them probably don't get used that often.
You don't think XSD is going to be used that often?
If you're not concerned about RDF round tripping, there's not that much need for it. If you're just saying
necessary
within
for
JSON
all the data
LD,
typing that we use.
Sorry?
You need it to specify dates.
Well, but you don't have to use XSD for that. You can also mint your own or timestamp, which is not in XSD, for example.
Well, we do have rules built in for specific XSD types, Boolean, double, integer.
Right. Although I
so
guess
XSD
that
does have a place in JSON-LD.
Right.
And
again,
I certainly would
they're
be
just for our RDF round tripping.
No. I think they're also for certainly double is there for expansion.
A native double wouldn't get expanded to a XSD double if you don't do type coercion in your context.
Well, that depends upon how that issue was resolved, because it says that any, as I recall, the issue still is that any coercion causes the value to be coerced into the value type form, even the coercion of a native type. I think
yes,
that's an issue.
But then you have to specify that coercion yourself as the author in the context. It's not done automatically by the processor.
Yes, but the point is that there are processor rules that take into consideration XSD. XSD has a particular relationship built into the API document that no other prefix does. The only other one would be RDF, but that's just there for the purpose of RDF round tripping.
Yes, and I would argue, but that's the topic of other issues, that even that XSD stuff should be moved to RDF and from RDF and not be handled in compaction and expansion. Because we really don't need it in expansion or compaction to do anything magic.
Well, I think that there's such an advantage to having a, whether or not we put anything in it, to say that there is a default context, it's located at this URL, and processors must load that, even if it's empty.
Sorry, can you say that again? It's located
at
the URL?
There is a URL that we define in the spec that is the location of the default context. And as part of, I guess, expansion, all processors must automatically load that context before doing any other processing or when resetting back to the default context. And then we can decide on what goes into that later. In fact, we can decide on it as over time after the spec is done.
Yeah, which is the same approach we took for the RDFA one. Also, keep in mind, Marcus, that we would probably have language in there that allows people to hard code that default context.
But first of all, that's a different thing that we are discussing now. We are discussing the default context or the initial context. Now it's hard coded in the spec. It's not something we retrieve dynamically.
So I think the point of this discussion is that there should be an initial context, and it should be loaded dynamically, not specified what the contents are in the body of the spec.
What's the
we can deliberate over what the contents should be, but they get encoded into a document at a stable location, which is loaded as part of processor startup.
Yeah, and hold on, Greg, just one small clarification on what you said. When you said loaded dynamically, you don't mean the processor actually has to go out and fetch it every single time, right? Or rather, even caching. The issue I have is that if we say that in JSON-LD it becomes really popular, that site is going to be hammered. Right?
Yeah.
So we don't want to do that.
I think, however we did it in RDFA, it's intended that it change, not frequently, but it change infrequently, so that there is some period. It can be built in, but if that's the case, then processor authors must periodically update their own internal definitions.
Yep.
Or can make use. It certainly should be served up with HTTP cache control headers, which would have that effect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that would then mean that the JSON-LD processor without network access wouldn't work at all.
No, that allows it to, one without network access can use a built-in version of it as long as the built-in version is updated with some period, just like with the RDFA.
Yeah, the concern here, having offline JSON-LD processors is a concern, but also if you have an offline JSON-LD processor, it's kind of counter to what the language is designed to do, right? I mean, because that means your offline JSON-LD processor probably wouldn't be able to read the vast majority of documents out there. But let's say that somebody wanted to do that for whatever reason. There would be spec language that would allow the person to effectively hard code that document into their processor. Does that make sense, Marcus?
Not really. That's then the same discussion again about having that hard coded context.
It's not
all
in
the
we don't specify the context of what is. We don't specify the contents of that document in the spec. All that goes in the spec is there exists a URL. The initial context is at that URL.
Yeah, but what's the advantage then?
That means that the advantage is that it allows us to, it gives us some time to figure out what goes into the initial context and effectively decide whether or not RDF or XSD or schema or any of those other terms basically belong in the initial context.
We have mechanisms in JSON-LD to reference a context, an external context. So everyone who needs or who would like to have those prefixes defined by some, I don't know, trusted third party, if you would call it that way, could just go and reference that. It's a one-liner. But embedding that into specification, I don't really like that idea, so that everyone has to do that.
We just found in RDFA that such problems were common. For instance, Facebook's whole usage of RDFA relies upon prefixes that they define in their spec but actually are not put into the documents, and therefore they could not really be processed as RDFA until we added a initial context that allowed us to have those prefixes defined for every processor. So that was a really good example of doing it. And then just I've been looking at some RDFA or some JSON-LD in the wild lately, and it's not uncommon that things are done wrong. So if I always know for some set of well-used properties that they take an ID type, that would be an opportunity to correct common errors that exist out in the wild, where you could say that FOF knows always takes an ID, for instance, or that DC date is always a date. If you look at the JSON-LD emitted by DBpedia, for instance, you see those types of problems. In fact, I found that if I just defined a context, I could apply it to DBpedia, and it worked just fine, except for the fact that they're still using ID instead of graph at the top level.
Yeah, but that's because the spec is still not stable. But
yeah, I guess my point was that we are still seeing common errors like that in the wild, and having a default context is a way to be able to address these types of common errors without requiring or without being dependent upon the authors to go back and change what might be frozen specs.
Yeah. I mean, this was a fairly big issue in RDFA. I don't know if Jason LD is in the same position.
The issue there is quite different, I would say. I mean, like, you have a lot of copy and paste errors there because you copy snippets from the document.
It's not copy and paste issues. These are authors sitting down and looking at examples. They're not copying and pasting, but they're looking at the examples and not understanding that they need to specify the prefix before they use it. Right? So this is...
But I mean, in JSON-LD, the context is such a fundamental concept that it's all about the context. Otherwise, it's just JSON. That's the only difference to plain JSON.
But in RDFA, it's a pretty fundamental concept to say that you have to define the prefixes before you use them. But people still didn't do that because they don't understand the whole namespaces thing. They don't understand that there's a prefix and a suffix. They just treat them as tokens. So fof colon name, they look at that and they say, okay, well, that's a token, fof colon name, and they use it in their markup without understanding that you need to declare the prefix. Previously, I think it's very much analogous to JSON-LD. I think that the difference with JSON-LD is that our target audience is different, right? We have developers who might be a little more savvy than just regular web authors. But I guess what Greg and I are arguing is that it doesn't hurt us to put a protection mechanism in here, so that if what we think is going to happen ends up happening, we have a way of modifying, of fixing those errors without having to go through the W3C rec track process again, which is a multi-year process, as we all know. But
that just allows us to fix stuff which uses prefixes and suffixes, which I think it's not that common in JSON-LD. That's an advanced concept, at least in the spec.
Well, we don't know what's going to be common.
Right.
I think common or not,
the point is that we have some real experience from what's happened in the past, and we can see that this could potentially be a problem for JSON-LD. So I think generally you learn from the mistakes of the past and apply them to the things that you do in the future. And this seems like a pretty low-cost way of adding something that allows for some future-proofing in a spec, even if we never decide things that we need to put in there now. In a year from now, we can come back and say, you know, we really should add these things to default context because that will fix all of these problems that we're starting to see in the wild.
Yeah, and you might break others. Things by doing so, things that you will never find out.
Well, if you have something that's undefined, it shouldn't break something, because anything else would layer on top of that and it end up having it be redefined.
But you start defining terms which might be used already in documents, and you don't know that they are used, but should be dropped.
They would be redefined in a context if they were used in documents. Right.
Yeah, but we are.
Oh, I
allowing,
see what you're saying. You're saying there's junk JSON. There's just regular JSON out there that they.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. I think we should just table this one and come back to it another time.
Yeah. We might want to put this out to the mailing list to get input from other people. So let's see.
But I think we agreed that if we have an initial context, that initial context should be defined externally, right?
Yeah, I think that was all of our opinions on that.
Well, I think it's a good
now
the clarification.
The contrary.
Yeah.
It's defined in the spec till now.
Okay, so I'll put a proposal in here. If JSON-LD has an initial context, it must be specified external to the JSON-LD syntax specification. Preferred,
well-known location.
Preferred. It must be specified at a well-known location. Okay. Marcus plus one minus one. Okay. Dave Lane plus one minus one. All right. Okay, yeah, and then the rest of it we'll just have to bounce back to the mailing list. Okay, so that's issue 80, 107. Next up is issue 107. Fragment identifier interpretation. IANA requires that we specify, well, not just IANA, the W3C tag and various other groups say that we really should specify how fragment identifiers are interpreted in documents. And to be clear, the IANA consideration here talks about how you interpret a fragment identifier for the document's URI. It does not say anything about how you should interpret fragment identifiers inside the document, right? Because that is very much dependent on the MIME type that you use when you request the document. So we are only talking about fragment identifiers for JSON-LD documents. So if you had foo.jsonld hash bar, what does that hash bar mean? What's it pointing to? So let's see. There are two proposals here. I had put one, and Marcus, you had put one. Marcus, you said in JSON-LD, a fragment identifier may identify a node in the linked data graph expressed in the document.
I think that's pretty consistent with what we want. What I like about that is it's not about some structural element of the document, but about an abstract concept that is described within the document. So that gets over the issue that I had described, which also exists, say, in Turtle and RDFA, where you might have two nodes that have a subject which is the same fragment identifier. And it's not that we refer to one or the other of them. It's that we refer to the abstract object that is described by the document using those fragment identifiers.
Right. I guess my concern was that if someone were to put that into something like a code editor or even, let's say, a web browser, it would be nice to be able to jump to something, and I don't know if we want to.
It would be similar, and we might be able to borrow from that purpose. I don't even know if we need to say that, but it might be something similar to how the JSON pointer would do it, which would be the first definition. But the same thing happens in RDFA. You can have multiple elements that have an about me. And if you were to do anything, you would probably go to the first of those.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and I wanted to.
I don't know that that's something we need to make to clarify. I mean, we don't clarify it in RDFA, do we?
No, because we never really had the in-depth discussion. Or rather, when we did, we couldn't come to a good conclusion on it.
I prefer Marcus's
HTTP range 14.
Yeah,
I'm fine with
Marcus's. I think
Marcus's.
I prefer Marcus's wording.
Sure. I'm fine with Marcus's proposal. I just, you know, we did discuss it, and I think we are all in agreement about what should be done. You know, and if we are, if that's the case, then we might as well, you know, resolve something and say, well, this is what the group thinks. You know, people are free to not follow it. We don't need to put it in the spec, but having a record of saying, look, that is what we decided, might be useful to implementers.
I have a question.
You mean
about
in terms of yeah, I say in terms of being able to actually locate yourself within the document. You know?
Yeah, yeah. For an implementer
yeah, okay.
to basically say, well, I did this because the group, you know, the group decided that it's kind of giving a clear direction for implementers, whereas it would be completely up to them if we didn't. And we think that there is a right thing to do, so we might as well say what we believe that is. Lane, you had a question.
Yeah, these are in the examples here. You just have like foo and bar. Are these going to be full URLs that are encoded instead of just bar, or how does that work?
Well, it could be a relative IRI in the document because we use base. You know, we have this concept of base. So if someone does ID colon hash bar, then that hash bar is associated with the current base, which is probably the IRI to the document. And if they had a full IRI, which is the full IRI for the document, it would be associated with that. So there's a deterministic way of resolving this based on RFC 3986.
Okay. We might. I don't know if we have any examples in the spec that have hash fragments in there.
Yeah, I don't know.
We might want to put an
know.
Example in spec just so people know that you can do that sort of thing.
Yeah, let me check really
yeah.
quickly. I think we might have not done it just to avoid HTTP range 14, but that was way back when. No, we do. We have ID hash Joe Bob identifying the subject.
Yeah, I think it's what there is. There are two different things going on here, though. One is the use of just a IRI which starts with hash, which is a fragment identifier in the relative to the document base.
Mm-hmm.
The other is an IRI, a full or partial or relative IRI, which includes a hash, in which
mm-hmm.
case it's really just uses IRI semantics, and it might refer to some other document. So I think the point about this is about hash or fragment identifiers, bare fragment identifiers used within the document, what they mean and what it means when you have a URL with a fragment identifier that resolves to a JSON LD document, that's where that fragment identifier comes into play.
Yeah. Lane, to address your issue, we have 68 fragment identifiers in the JSON LD syntax spec right now. So I think we...
Okay, that's enough.
Yeah. okay, so Marcus's proposal is there.
By the way, did you guys see the fake tag resolution
yeah.
on how to transmit an elephant over
yeah.
over HTTP?
Yeah, that was good. I don't know how funny they thought it was, but that was pretty hilarious. I'm pretty sure they thought it was funny.
I think all of them have
a good sense of humor. Okay, issue 80 is done. Issue 107 is done. Issue 96 and 97 are done. Okay, now we're getting into the API issues. Issue 100 is up next.
Mana, do you want to put down something about that jumping to the first instance in a browser for this issue as well, or...?
It's up to you guys. You guys want to say something about it?
I'd put it in as a note.
Okay. Let's see. So note when processing frag, if an implementer is developing clients to view JSON LD markup and wants to implement a feature for navigating to a fragment identifier in a JSON LD document, the client software should navigate to the first definition of the fragment identifier in the JSON LD document.
You know, I'd be careful about making it normative text. I think it should be informative.
Okay. Lowercase should. The group has discussed. Let's see. No, the group has discussed what happens, what clients should do, what graphical clients should do when given a JSON LD fragment identifier. Okay, so how's that? We're not going to resolve that. It's just whether or not we agree with it.
Yeah.
Okay, topic issue 100, should the JSON LD API have a mode strict flag?
Could we talk about 98 first? I think that would make sense.
Sure. All right. The reason I put this at the end is because I don't think that we're going to be able to resolve this on the call. Well, we can discuss it.
Which one, 98?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's, we should be able to resolve that.
Okay. I'm glad you have that kind of faith. Okay.
And there are just some minor details in that issue, I think.
Okay. Go ahead, Marcus. I'll scribe for you if you want to discuss this.
Yeah, so it all started with Greg was looking at data type coercion, and he proposed that native types such as Booleans and numbers should not, or data type coercion should not apply to those native types. And they should remain unchanged through expansion and compaction. And they should just be converted to type literals when converting to RDF. And then independent of the coercion associated with the property, because that coercion doesn't apply. And well, we had quite some discussions about that. And I'm not sure if I remember correctly, but I think Dave and I at least said that data type coercion should apply also to native types, and during expansion those native types should then be converted to strings. We didn't agree yet how that should happen, so if that should fall back on the JSON processor's toString method or capabilities, or that 15 digits precision stuff. and during or in RDF round tripping those native, that's something I proposed, and they didn't agree with that. So I proposed that native types get automatically type coerced in RDF round tripping to access the integer, double, or boolean, and they're converted back automatically to the native types when converting from RDF to JSON-LD. And in compaction, the strings are never converted to native types. All that happens there is just if there is an expanded object form, so add value and add type, and the type matches the term, the add type is dropped, and all that remains is that string value of add value.
Oh, hold on, say that again. In compaction, strings are never converted to native types. All that happens there.
So the expanded object form is replaced with the value of add value if the type matches. And all that conversion between native types and strings happens just in RDF round tripping, so to RDF and from RDF. And that's
Say that again, Marcus. I'm having a hard time describing all this.
Sorry. The conversion between native types and strings happens just in RDF round tripping, so in to RDF and from RDF. And
so RDF round tripping results in converting them back to native types in JSON. So if you have a string with 15 and it's an XSD integer, when you do from RDF, it is going to be a number, a JSON number.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. That's what it was until a couple of days ago when Dave Longley convinced me to change it back to an expanded representation. Which is consistent with basically from RDF always outputting basically expanded JSON-LD.
Yeah.
And the only So the only thing that remains there is that if we have that behavior, we might consider to have a flag in from RDF to turn that automatic conversion on or off, or throw an exception if it can't be done.
Well, if native types are always expanded to the full value representation and expansion, and from RDF always basically outputs expanded JSON-LD, then it would be inconsistent for it to not be in the same form. But I think one of the issues I have is that pretty much any processing of JSON-LD involves doing expansion, which means that any use of native types will have them be replaced with, at best, just strings after doing either expansion, compaction, framing, or RDF conversion. So I think we've lost something there. We've lost the ability to retain the native types.
But currently the native types are retained unless you have a type coercion, right? In expansion.
Yeah. So my thought had been that if you had a numeric type and you had a numeric conversion, that you would not need to actually transform the type. Same with Boolean. In fact, my original proposal was that native types are not transformed at all, but remain in their form through expansion and compaction. Because their meaning is unambiguous.
Yes, but you would. So that would mean that the term doesn't match. Or, the type coercion is ignored. I don't know how to put it.
That's right. Type conversion only has effect for strings. So it doesn't have effect for a value, something that's already in value form. And I would say that it doesn't have effect for something that's a native type. It only has effect for something which is a string.
Well, yeah, okay. I would say if you specify type coercion, it should always apply to strings, numbers, and booleans. And it shouldn't be converted back to the native form in compaction, but just left there as a string.
So then I cannot, as an author that wants to make use of native types, I can do that as long as I don't use the algorithms when those the properties with those types are subject to coercion. So it might make sense for me
to coerce them to access the type.
It just seems odd that you know, I've got something integer, and I go ahead and I describe the type as being an integer. That means that I can't actually express it with a number. That just seems backwards to me.
It might make more sense
to say that that things that are expressed as Boolean, integer, or double, always compact down to their native representations when there's no loss involved. In fact, perhaps they just they always do that, and then we count on the what was in the previous issue that we sidestepped for the time being on the checking the strict flag to find where those things are inconsistent.
Well, but the thing is, if you have, for example, the number 5, and you coerce that to double, how would you preserve that in expansion, for example?
Well, so I think you expand it to the full form value.
The full form being
would be
at value?
At value with 5 converted using the percent 1.15e. And then when you compact, that gets turned back into a number.
I wonder if you're going to end up with a different... I guess you might not end up with a different number.
Yes.
Double's tricky in that
double's tricky.
We're basically saying if you use XSD double, you're going to lose precision, period. The issue with double was that if at any point we go out of string form, we lose precision from what the author intended in the original document. And that's an issue, right? We wanted the ability for people to use XSD doubles without losing precision, and they could do that if they had, like, 1 point and then, you know, 100,000 different numbers after that. As long as we kept it in string form, that precision would be kept. But if we do what you're saying, Greg, and at some point something that's an XSD double gets turned into a native number, that's an issue for doubles at least. I guess this is the reason that I don't feel like we're talking about doing three very different things, and they're all kind of jumbled up together, and it's very hard to kind of pull all of these things apart. I think that there's a number of different discussions that are happening here, right? One of them is preservation of values in XSD double. So that could mean that we either need a flag to say treat doubles just like you treat anything else and convert them to native types. I don't care about the loss in precision. Or we could have a flag that says, or that same flag would basically be like, don't convert anything that's a double into a number because I'm, you know, working on at NASA and it's very, very important for me to keep all of that precision all the way through. I have a special library that will, you know, do math on that string, that number.
Of course, then it wouldn't be XSD. I think XSD double in that case does have defined precision. So if you were to use extra precision, then you probably wouldn't be using an XSD double data type. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
But which steps are you talking about, Manu?
Are
you talking about RDF round tripping or compaction expansion?
No, I'm talking about expansion and compaction. I'm talking about changing something that's a string automatically to its native type, like a double.
Yes.
Right. So it's specifically, the only thing, I'm very, very specifically talking about XSD double and it being represented as a string when it came in and then us modifying it to a native type. And that's, I'm only doing that to show that there's one issue here where we can't necessarily convert to a native type. Right. We can, like Boolean true and true and false, that's lossless. Integers are, you could argue that they're lossless because they have a specific range. Right, and then you could also argue that doubles are lossless because they have a specific range.
But the question here is really, why does it come in that form in the first place? If you're not doing RDF round tripping, it will never be in string form. If you're staying in JSON-LD, you would probably work with native types anyway.
I don't know if that holds. Authors are going to do crazy stuff with this markup, right? And I don't know if this is so crazy that we shouldn't support it, or if an author feels like, well, I can express the number 5 as 5 or a string with XSD integer, right? I should be able to do both.
Yeah,
and
but
they would take that.
Know the consequences of that.
Well, yeah, but I don't think anyone's going to actually read the spec to understand the consequences. They're just going to use it. Right.
Yeah,
and
wouldn't it be fair enough if you encode it as a string, it remains a string in compaction expansion, and if you have a native number, it remains a native number in compaction and expansion?
I think so, but we have all these corner cases that we need to kind of discuss before we say that that's the way we want it to be. Because I mean, because then you know it's with RDF round tripping, then it's an issue, right? Because it's everything's going to come in as a string, isn't it, Greg?
Well, I mean
that's where we
could provide a flag, as Mark I think someone suggested, where
right.
Yeah,
it could use native types for those versions.
Right. So
it's similar to Turtle, where you. You know, there are native representations for integers, decimals, doubles, and booleans, which can be used. And there are no language actually there as to when you're serializing if you're prohibited from using that form or not. They just don't say anything.
Say that again, Greg. I'm sorry.
Turtle has native forms for representing Booleans, integers, decimals, and doubles, which is in addition to their sort of string caret type version.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They provide no guidance as to what serializers must do. They basically
mm-hmm.
just say that this results in the following. RDF when it is parsed.
Mm-hmm.
So the equivalent thing for us perhaps would be expansion as being sort of like the equivalent of turning it into RDF, which
mm-hmm.
would say that turning those representations into the expanded value form would be the way to get it into a consistent format and not say anything about what the result of serializing that back out, which is basically compaction, does. Now, that perhaps gives us some problems with testing,
mm-hmm.
but it allows us to not sort of strain to a point where other processors have stayed away from.
I'm a bit lost. Are you saying that we shouldn't really specify what happens, or we should?
Well, I'm just pointing out that in Turtle, it's not specified.
Yeah, I don't...
Turtle has a very similar You don't agree that it's not specified, or you don't agree
I don't agree that that's the best approach. I don't agree that that's that. I think that we should be very specific with this stuff, even though
well,
it is.
If we go, if we look at what the purpose of these data types, the purpose of those XSD data types is to reflect the way that data is actually maintained within computers.
Mm-hmm.
So double is based upon IEEE float, IEEE
mm-hmm.
double.
Mm-hmm.
Integer is based upon integer with, I think there's a fixed precision, but I'm not sure. And Boolean, obviously, on Boolean.
Mm-hmm.
So we are also making use of those representations within JSON. Now, JSON is crippled because there's only a number type,
mm-hmm.
there's which makes it difficult to tell the difference between integer, decimal, and double.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some of the language we had was, if when compacting, if there is a coercion, that and you can represent the value in native form without loss of precision, then it may be transformed or must be transformed into the native representation. So that would say if I had something that was a 1 was an XSD integer, it could be represented as the number 1.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a 5.1 as an XSD double, that could be represented with a number. If I had 5 that was an XSD double, or 5.0, that could not be represented. And therefore, the processor would not be able to create that native representation.
Well,
getting
into extra
digits of precision is really getting exactly into the issue of why there is an XSD double with specified precision in the first place.
Right.
But
keeping in mind
move,
that we... Go ahead, Marcus.
Why do we move that issue to compaction and expansion if it's really a from and to RDF issue, in my opinion at least? Because if you move it to expansion and compaction...
That. I think we're having a much higher level discussion about how we treat numbers through all of the API methods. I agree with you, Marcus, that at the end of the day we might figure out that this is only applies to and from RDF, but I don't think that that's the case right now. At least I think that it involves at least to and from RDF, compaction and expansion.
Well, that's then, everything we have.
Right, exactly, which is why I think this is... Well, I mean, we have framing as well, right? I'm saying it doesn't necessarily have to do with framing, but we go through expansion to do framing, so, yeah, it pulls that in as well. So
and compaction.
Right, yeah. So I mean, this is a how do we treat numbers as they go through the API methods discussion. I don't think it's purely just to and from RDF. But I do think that we're kind of narrowing in on a solution.
So if we have a native number in a document and we expand that document, do we want that number is still in native format or not?
Ideally, I think we do want it to be still in native form.
Yeah.
I mean, during expansion?
Well. Yes.
During expansion? Okay, but so there's the case of just the number without coercion, and there's a case of a number where it's coerced. If we have a coercion to access the integer and we have a number, do we want to, should that be coerced to the value representation?
Yes,
I'm wondering if we...
integer is just one data type. There are probably hundreds of data types representing integers, which we...
Right, but the only ones that we are talking about is XSD integer, XSD double, XSD boolean. Right. Those are the only ones that the JSON-LD processor cares about. There are many other, you know, types, but we don't... JSON-LD processor doesn't know anything about them.
Yes, and the only reason why we care about them is because we want to have round-tripping to RDF, right?
No,
otherwise
it's also round-tripping between expansion and compaction.
Right.
So if I have something which is a, you know, some Boolean type, and I in good conscience, I create a a description in a context that says that the type of this is XSD Boolean, and I represent the data using true or false within my JSON document. Now when I just try to go to a different format, I've now lost that Boolean representation. And I think, and as an author, by saying this is an XSD Boolean, I feel I've made my intention obvious that I want it represented as a Boolean. Yet it will not. It will be represented as a string true or the string false after round tripping from expansion back to compaction.
Right.
And I think that doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
This is a case where I'd say that now if we expand it and expands from true into the value representation of true with XSD Boolean, that's fine as long as when I compact it, I can get back to true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think
and I can't because I can't without any loss of meaning.
And the reason that that's important is because when you write code to work on that data structure and you go from a compact form to expanded form and then back to compact, then you have to have all these branches in your code where you're saying, okay, well, check to see if it's the Boolean value true, and then check for the text string true as well. And that's just something that we don't want developers to have to do.
Or worse yet, they just use the value. Think because it's a Boolean, if it's not there or if it's false, it evaluates to false. But an empty string would evaluate to true in JavaScript and most other languages.
Yeah, but why do you type coerce it then if you rely on those native types?
I type coerce it because as an author, it's a mistake that would be really easy to make. You know, I have the data type. I describe it. Oh, this is a Boolean type. I want to make sure everything's in Boolean form. That allows me to use the strict mode checking to find things that aren't in that form. But if the side effect is, well, and by the way, it means that you can't do this and actually keep it in that form, then that seems seriously broken to me.
Right. Dave,
and I think people are going to make that mistake.
Yeah, I think they're going to do the same thing as well. I'm concerned about that as well. Dave, have you been able to, Longley, have you been able to follow the discussion? It's been a bit sporadic.
Well, some of the notes are probably missing for like the last 10 minutes. I was trying to read up here. I've got about 20 minutes so I can be on the call here.
Sure.
I was thinking, I noticed that you said it looks like we're discussing several different issues. I was thinking maybe we could discuss, try to break the problem up, and then resolve whatever inconsistencies there are at the end. So maybe we could break this up and talk about things that we all agree on, agree to everything that we agree on, and then see if that comes out with a consistent answer or not, and then try and resolve it. For instance, do we all agree that during compaction or expansion, if something is already in a native form, we can just leave it that way?
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with to or from RDF, just compaction and expansion.
So yeah, I don't think we agree that expanding something in native form keeps it a native form.
Okay.
Because there's the case of whether there's a coercion on it or not.
Okay.
And I think that either we say that native types remain native types in spite of any coercion of the data type that they're on, or we say that native types are always turned into a expanded form on expansion, and there's some big advantages to doing that, but that when possible, they are converted back to native form on compaction.
Okay.
I think we do one of those two paths is, I think, the way we go.
All right. My opinion is that if there are no type coercion rules when you're expanding, leave the number in native form because we don't lose any information and we keep everything native, simple. If there is a type coercion rule, I think that we should convert to the string form with the string type in expanded form. That's what I think that we should do. It's the most consistent thing with all the other values that we expand.
What happens when you compact again?
When you're compacting, if there is no type coercion rule and you have a native type, you leave it as a native type. If there is a rule then I think for the three XSD rules that we support, you have to try and do the conversion. And I think in that case, we need to have flags set up. And we need at least the strict flag, because I think people are going to want to write code that where they specify some kind of context, and they're expecting the end result to have native types in it, and they're going to write their code to native types. They don't want to have to write if and else statements every time they access their data. They're not going to do that. They're going to end up just writing something to normalize it anyway. So that's what this tool should be. This tool should do that normalization for them.
Right, and I think the assumption here is that if we're doing this type of thing, we have to have the assumption is we have those flags, right? We can also discuss not having the flags, but understanding that that kind of throws out this all this ability to do, you know. It throws out the ability to do what we're talking about right now.
We just make it so everyone who uses this tool has to write another layer. If we don't have those flags, that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But just a quick question. Do we really say that the XSD, integer, double, and boolean are equal to native types in JSON, which they are not?
Well, those are the closest approximations that we picked. We could go and invent our own names, but I thought the reason why we didn't do that is we were trying to have some kind of compatibility with RDF and with what people were already using.
Yes, and that's what I'm arguing. It's about compatibility to RDF, but has nothing to do with JSON-LD itself. And therefore, I wouldn't expect that someone who has a type coercion rule of XSD double to expect it to become a native type then. Because it's an XML
type.
Well,
XSD is
not
just about RDF. XSD is a data type regimen that extends beyond RDF. So it is the W3C representation of native data types. And if this is to be a W3C recommendation, then it would make sense that it interoperate with those data type definitions.
We also have a way to handle that, and that
is
go ahead.
Sorry. The interoperation between to and from RDF and not in the not within JSON-LD. It's about interoperability. It's not about doing it within JSON-LD.
What we could say, and I think what we're at least one of the proposals that's out there is if you don't put any type coercion information into your context, then anything that has a type of XSD integer is going to remain a string. What we're saying is if you put a type coercion rule in JSON-LD into a context, then your string will be converted to a native type. But if you don't do that, it will stay a string. I think we get into trouble when we start doing this. Well, I think we get into trouble if we start doing automatic conversion, and we could look at making it more complex and having a flag for turning automatic conversion on and off when you're going from RDF. But if we force incoming triples that have XSD integer from RDF to be converted to native type, that's a mistake in my opinion, because we could lose precision. It's not necessarily what people wanted to do. It makes JSON-LD make people not want to use it as a data transport mechanism because...
Yes, I agree with that.
Right, okay.
So I'd say we try to separate the to and from RDF issue and just restrict ourselves to compaction and expansion at this point.
That's fine with me.
So, yeah. So my concern is that just working with expansion, compaction and expansion, if I declare my data types through coercion rules, that if I start off with something that's a native form, I do not end up with something that's a native form. So if assuming I'm actually declaring the data types to have those coercion rules, my suggestion is that if we don't want to get into automatic conversion back and forth, that we basically say that if something is in a native type, it stays at that native type through expansion and compaction in spite of any coercion rules that are placed on it.
But then you lose that information.
what information have you lost?
The type.
If you had a type coercion in the context and you expanded it, you lose the context, which means you lose the type information about the native type.
Yes, but you haven't modified the data. Data was originally specified as an integer. It stays as an integer. Or is it
no, but you don't know if it's a double or not. Because it's just a number in JSON. There's no distinction between integer and double, so you no longer know if you were working with an integer or with a double.
Well, you know in as much as the compacted form comes with a reference to the context, which defines what the data type actually is.
Yeah,
but that's probably a different context.
You have to know that anyway, because if I saw it as a string with a number, I'd have to know, well, for this property, that is an XSD integer,
if you put it in an expanded form, you put the type information along in the value. So you have
for
the
expanded
value.
Form, then you've
right.
Well, for expanded form, what you've lost is that this number is intended to be to have some specific data type. But what you haven't done is lost the native representation. So one way to
you
do that
lost it
would
at the
be
number.
To
That's
put
true.
It into a value form, but instead of using a string, you just maintain the native type as the value of at value. Then
if you serialize that, you don't know what it is because it's just a number in JSON. Let's just take the really specific example. You have in compacted form a property that points to a native number. But in the context, it says that it's an XSD double, and the number is the number 1. When you go and you expand that, if you just throw away the context information, you're going to end up with the number 1. And you don't know that it's a double. And if it doesn't have a decimal you might interpret it as an integer.
What I suggested was that if you had the number 1 coming in, that we would come out with a expanded value representation. But the value of at value would, instead of being the string 1, it would be the number 1.
Yeah, but I'm saying that doesn't solve the problem. You still don't know whether it's an integer or a double. It's just a number.
No.
You mean you don't know what it was?
What Greg is saying is you have at value, and the value of at value is a native number.
And then it has a type, which says it's an XSD double.
Oh, you're going to include the type information.
Yes.
So something like
that. Okay, I'm sorry. I was missing that part.
Information from the... That allows you to do round-tripping between expansion and compaction and get back to the native representation.
Yeah, that's true.
A compatible data type.
Right, that's something Marcus proposed earlier. But what advantage does that have over just using a string? Because
I have, as an author, I think you jumped in right when I was discussing this. As an author, okay. I very well might want to define some property as I was using XSD Boolean as the type because I want to do validation that the data comes in is in Boolean form, and it makes sense to me as an author that if I've got a property which uses Boolean, you know, alive, true or false, that's what I want it to do. But if I do that and I do any form of processing on it, I'm going to lose the Boolean representation, and to me that's broken. So if we maintain if we do expansion into the form where it stays true rather than a string true, then when I compact, if the coercion is compatible with a Boolean representation, I can get true back and not a string true. And that becomes particularly important for Boolean types where I might just say if value rather than if value equals the string false, or I've got a branch in there based upon whether it might be a Boolean representation or it might be a string representation of the Boolean value. So this allows me to start with a Boolean representation and end up with a Boolean representation after expansion, compaction, and framing.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
like
if we disallow, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do this, but I was just going to say if we disallow native types in expanded form, you would still only have one code branch. You would just be checking for the string true or false.
Well, except that the original author anyway specified it as a Boolean, intending that their API be used with Boolean or numeric values.
So, do we all agree that the end result of what we want is we want one code branch for the developers, right? If that is the underlying basis for the decisions we're trying to make, then when we go from a JSON-LD document that the JSON-LD author provides, so it's got, let's say, the JSON value of true in it, when it goes through expansion and back to compaction, we agree that the JSON-LD document author is expecting it to still be true in native JSON form. Is that the goal that we're trying to reach? Basically, any kind of round trip within JSON-LD, not talking about to and from RDF at all, but within JSON-LD, if you start out with true and you go through expansion and compaction, you have to end up with true, the JSON native
and
type.
Do you have type coercion?
Let's not talk about type coercion yet. But is that the end goal? Is that what we're trying to do?
Yes.
Or do we think that that's
not
enough?
I think the spec already basically says that. If there's no coercion, then native types are not transformed during expansion and compaction.
I think we probably all agree when there is no type coercion, we leave native types alone during compaction and expansion.
Okay, all right. So now let's add type coercion into it. If the type coercion is XSD Boolean, and you start out with a value of true, JSON native, and it's got a coercion to XSD Boolean, you start out with a JSON native type, you go through expansion, you go back to compaction, you end up with true as an XSD, you end up with the JSON native true, right, in compacted form.
What's the context?
That's what I believe should happen.
Was that Marcus?
I think we both. Yeah, go ahead, Marcus.
What's the context in compaction that you use? Is there a type coercion?
There's an XSD Boolean in the context when you use in the context that you used to compact the document. That type has an XSD Boolean associated with it. That property.
Okay. What happens if there isn't a type coercion there?
Okay, hold on. If there isn't, it still stays native form. We just agreed to that, right? If there's no type coercion, it stays as true. If there is type coercion, and the type coercion.
You can use two different contexts in expansion and compaction. So what if I have a type coercion in the context I use for expansion, but don't have one in the one I use for compaction?
I think we need to ask that question next. I think the current question is, after compaction, if you used XSD Boolean, should you have a native type of Boolean for your value, if your value can be converted to a Boolean or was a Boolean to begin with?
Well, that's one of the problems I have. If it can be converted, what does that mean? Is 5 true?
Well, let's stick with the simple cases. If it's true or false.
I think the question was,
if I started off with Boolean true, and I have a coercion, consistent coercion and expansion and compaction for XSD Boolean, should it end up as true after I'm done with compaction? And I think that was my original case there, where I think this is absolutely the case.
I agree. Absolutely, that should happen. That would totally be expected behavior.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree
Great.
As well.
I think
okay.
we should put something down about that.
Okay, so proposal, when round tripping XSD Boolean values, if a JSON LD, when round tripping XSD Boolean values, from JSON LD through expansion and back to compact and back through compaction, JSON native Boolean value will.
With XSD Boolean data type conversion.
Data type conversion will remain a JSON.
Does that apply just to XSD Boolean? What if I have some other type?
Well, I think that I think the next.
About,
this is
yeah,
one thing we agree on.
I think we're just trying to get agreement on something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
okay.
That. Yeah, I don't know.
I
think the next thing.
Yeah, so I think what we're trying to do here is we're trying to build from fundamentals, and I think that this is ultimately the direction that we want. We don't want to surprise the developer. We just have to outline the logic that gets us from point A to point B. And like Dave Longley said, at the end there are going to be corner cases, and it might not be pretty, but the end result is we want something that is largely consistent. Right, so I think the consistency that we're going with is if you start out with the JSON native type, and if all of the type coercion information matches that JSON native type, you're going to end up with the JSON native type in the end. Right.
Right. We have to get into the details of what matches means, but
right.
We want to define expected behavior.
Right.
If you start with a native type and you have a coercion rule, whatever we decide, if it's XSD or if we go some other direction. If it's something that means Boolean and you start with a native type Boolean, you should end up with a native type Boolean.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's actually a question. Does that type coercion have to mean it is a Boolean? Does the JSON-LD processor have to understand that that type is a Boolean?
That is one of the questions we need to address, but we're saying if there is something that the JSON-LD processor does understand as meaning type Boolean, and you put that in your type coercion rule, if you start with a native type Boolean, you will end up with a native type Boolean when you go through compaction.
Boolean value with XSD.
Yeah. Dave, can you remember why that add value with a native type, why we changed that? I think you said that you wouldn't like to have that.
Why we changed what?
I proposed some time ago that we have add value, and the value of that is in native form, so it's a Boolean or a number.
Oh, okay. Instead of a string, you mean?
Yes.
I didn't know if we were going to support authors using native types in that position, and if we weren't, it would be more consistent to just use always have a string in that position. So the expanded value for anything is always a string. But if we're going to start allowing authors to put things there, which it seems like maybe we should do, then I don't think I'm going to be opposed to it.
Okay.
I feel the same way.
All right. So Dave Lane, plus one, minus one, plus zero. And Marcus.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, so I would imagine that this rule applies to, let's not go there yet. Basically, what we're saying is we have a matching function. There's a JSON-LD or JSON-LD processor matching function a decider function that figures out whether something is a Boolean, an integer, or a decimal, right? And if it
could
and
leave
if it,
out the, could we leave out implementation details for a moment? I think that's easier.
Sure. So there's a matching function that can decide on whether or not it's a native type or not. Is that enough information for us to make the rest of these decisions? What I'm saying is that we can make it general by saying that when round tripping, there exists a native type detection function that.
Yeah, I think we don't need that.
Okay, but that's in general, that's what we're agreeing to, right?
It might be a trivial function,
right.
But I think that saying it this way allows us to describe a a general practice of dealing with native types, that we can extend what we have here from Boolean to integer and, well, to numeric types, I should say.
Right.
Yeah, I think what we're talking about here is just describing principles of expected behavior. There's such a thing as a native type. If somebody wants a native type out of our processor, they should be able to get one. And if they start with one and they want to preserve it, they should be able to preserve it. We're almost getting into use cases here that we obviously need to support. So we're describing how this processor needs to work to support the obvious cases.
Right. Okay. So basically, the principle of expected behavior is that there is such a thing as a native type. If they want to preserve the native type through compaction, through expansion and compaction, they must be able to do so. And it lines up well
in the face of data type coercion.
Right,
of consistent
right.
data type coercion.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, all of this discussion is in the face of data type coercion, because without it, we have all agreed we're not going to change their native types at all.
Right, right, right. Okay, so that's good. That's the base layer. Now let's start talking about specifics, right? So,
and I've got about 5 minutes.
Okay.
Keep going.
We've discussed. I think we could potentially come up with a solution for this offline. I don't think that we really need to. We need to iterate all the possibilities, but I think the only ones that are up in the air right now are XSD integer, XSD double, and then we need to figure out what we're doing about to and from RDF. But I think that decision has just been made easier by the decisions we've just made.
I think we can make it even easier if we first decide whether @value supports native data types or not.
And I think we all just more or less said it does.
I think we can agree to that. I think we have to support that because alters are going to use it.
So can we put a proposal for that?
Yep, writing it in. @value supports native JSON data types.
And in expansion, a native data type will remain a native data type, but put into @value if
in
that
an expansion, if there is coercion, a native data type will be represented as a expanded value where the original native data type is used as the value of @value.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm looking for.
And Longley, I'm assuming that for
normalization. I agree with that.
Okay. For normalization, we expand everything out to a string, or everything, all the values become
String. Let's not get into that discussion. Okay. It's going to be the same thing that you do for 2RDF, probably.
Okay. So the proposal, value supports native JSON types, data types such as number, Boolean, and string.
I agree to that, and we probably also wanted to say when you're expanding, if you had a type coercion rule in the context, then it becomes the value of type in the expanded form.
Okay, hold on.
The value of @value.
Okay, say that again. This is another proposal?
Yes, so if
true
you start
expands
out...
To, so for example, true... The native value true would expand to @value true @type XSD Boolean.
It would actually expand to whatever type they had put into the context. So they could
the coerced type. Okay, right.
Yes.
So
you start off with a document that has a context that has a type coercion rule for your native type. We can call it foo if we want to, or XSD Boolean. And when you expand, you get exactly what was just typed in there.
Okay. And then when you compact again?
When you compact, go ahead.
The type matches, it's just dropped, and @value, the whole object is replaced with the value of @value.
Yes, and that's just consistent with exactly what we do with strings. Yes, exactly.
If
the types are the same.
It's a consistent data type when you're compacting.
Yes.
So if it becomes that, if it's, say, true @value true @type XSD Boolean after expansion, if I am coercing to something else, to integer, it then
it will stay in expanded form.
Stay in expanded
form. One of two things would happen. It would stay in expanded form and you would pick the term, or you would not pick the term. And that's to be debated. That's a different separate issue.
Yeah. I think right now you probably wouldn't pick the term.
I would agree with that, but separate issue. So it might go down there.
Right.
Okay, so our, what proposal are we looking at next? Do we have one? Do we want to say something to that effect?
Yeah, if during expansion a native data type with type coercion gets expanded to the expanded object form where the value of add value is in the same native data type.
I lost you. Hold on. During expansion, the native JSON value with type coercion applied gets expanded to the
expanded object form.
Uh-huh. Where?
Where the value of add value is still in the native data type. And add type is the type coercion. The type in the type coercion.
Okay, so that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's actually just the exact same rule that applies to strings.
Yes.
What about that? What happens if that, because that's what happened after I expanded because it was coerced to integer. Now when I compact to access the integer, does it get represented as true? Because the data types match?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I think that's the right thing to do in
expansion. Well, that's why I'm trying to interpret this
proposal.
Because
that's what the author said. Okay.
All right. Well, during expansion, native JSON values.
Hold on, Greg. So I think that what we can do is we can get. We're going general to more specific, and I think what you just put in there is pretty specific. That's an error case. So we're dealing with what happens in the normal cases, and we can get into kind of weird corner cases like that.
I had misunderstood the proposal that was just about expansion. So.
Okay. So have we?
Unfortunately, I have to get going, but this was going fairly well. I think we should. Yeah, sure. We should keep going the same way because we're actually making progress on this issue, which is good.
Right. All right. Okay. So
I got to go. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. So. Let's see, during expansion, do we want to talk about compaction next? Well, I guess during, or do we want to talk about your issue next, Greg? What happens when the types don't match? Or if the matching function doesn't find a match?
Yeah, I think there might be a bunch of special cases here. So you could imagine that if I expanded this to, so my example there, a value true type XSD integer. So if it is going back to XSD integer, you could certainly imagine then that we continue to use the Boolean value true.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's consistent with both representations. If it's going back to Boolean, you could also imagine that we continue to use true because value is in that form.
Yeah,
I think this is getting
like
into
that.
I think this is getting into the what exactly the matching function does, and I think that we should propose that as we should go offline and figure that out, meaning that that matching function really needs to take everything into account. I'm afraid that if we take it piecemeal, that we're gonna it's going to be difficult to do it piecemeal.
I still don't think we need a matching function. So compaction now could work by just looking for a match of add type, and if that's the, if it matches, the value of add value is the result of that property.
I guess the question though is what constitutes a match? Is what Greg just put in there?
Was a direct that, match. So
you're saying no, that is not allowed, what Greg just put in there, true and XSD integer.
It is allowed, and if your context in compaction has XSD integer, it will end up to be just true. If it's XSD boolean, it will stay in the expanded form, as you would lose information.
If it's XSD boolean, yes, I think we would not choose that term. That's
yes,
right.
Yes, exactly.
So it would stay in expanded form, probably using the absolute IRI.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I think
hold on. Which example are we talking about right now? The one Greg put in there? So value true and then XSD integer. And when we compact that, it's just
if I take the property and create a term which is coerced to XSD boolean, it would not match this value. It currently would not, because the type is inconsistent with the type is inconsistent.
So whatever Marcus just typed in there, yes, I'm agreeing with Marcus so far. Wait a second. The second thing that Marcus just typed in there, we agree that with that is true in XSG integer.
The thing is
yes.
that in your initial document you have that exactly the same context in the document which puts that XSD integer into the expanded form. So it's a perfect round trip in that case.
That's right.
I guess the question it's strange to me that someone would look at true and assume that it's a XSD integer.
It's a corner case.
Strange. It's also strange if someone coerces true to integer.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a corollary, right? We basically said that if that native types remain in their form when we expand and we use whatever the data type was defined for that property. So in this case, it was defined to be XSD integer. It was a native form. It goes back to XSD integer. It remains a native form.
Mm-hmm.
That's entirely consistent.
Yeah.
It may be nonsensical. But that's because it's sort of a made-up example that shouldn't really happen.
Okay. And the reason we're saying that this is okay is because the author has specified this, right? So the author specified the context for this. So I guess the concern I have is that if the input document the author didn't create the input document, but an input document comes in, and then the author specifies a context that says, oh, well, foo is XSD integer, and then they compact it, and then foo ends up becoming true, they're going to be slightly confused because they were expecting it to be XSD integer, and it's not.
Well, the issue is a little bit more complicated because the author might not define the context. It might be the consumer that defines the context.
Right. Right.
But
so
if the consumer defines
the
context, then they're basically saying this is how they want the data interpreted.
Right. But to them, they might say that they might effectively state that, oh well, that's strange. I'm going to end up adding that number to something else later on. So what happens when I add true to 5,600? I mean, I'm guessing you'd get 5,601, maybe. Can you do that?
Yeah, but you will. You also have to validate your input data anyway.
No. See, that's the whole point behind the strict and lax flags, right? So we're saying that we would not raise it. If you're in strict mode, we wouldn't raise any kind of exception with what the last thing that Marcus just typed into to IRC?
I think we might raise an exception in strict mode.
Okay. I would say that we absolutely would raise an exception in strict mode.
Yeah. Because they're incompatible data types.
Right.
But we got here because we didn't want to lose information just through the use of data types when things are specified in advance and they are consistent.
Okay. Okay. What else do we need to discuss round tripping?
Could we have a proposal for that compaction that we just described or talks about? So if there is a direct match for add type,
when compacting,
we convert it to
match against the data type specified, well, against the type for a property specified in the context. Match for the value against the type of objects, for example, value 5 and access the integer. Okay, so when compacting, if there's a direct match for the value against the type for a property specified in the context, for example, the value 5 and access the integer for the type, then the compact, I guess the value string 5?
I think the values doesn't have anything to do with it. It's type.
At type. If there's a direct match between at type in the document and at type in the context.
Oh, okay. When compacting, if there's a direct match for at type in the document, I guess add type for the property and add type in the context.
Then the value of the property is replaced with add, the value of add value.
Then the value of add value is...
the value of the property.
The value of the property is replaced with the value of at value.
At value, yes.
Right.
In compacting, if there's a direct match for type, or a type.
So I think the other thing would be perhaps they just adding a flag to from RDF that causes the processor to use native representations when it can.
Yes.
Okay. I'm putting in an example for the proposal we just made just so that it's clear, a bit more clear. And this is in context. Okay, so that's resolved. Okay, and then I guess the proposal is a flag. Go ahead. Are we done with this issue? Do we think we're not really done with this issue because we haven't discussed the corner cases? But do we want to jump to another issue?
The flag that you're talking about now, I put in a proposal in issue 100 for that.
Okay. Uh, Oh, but that's the mode strict flag, right?
Yes, but it's about that.
Well, that's a strict flag from RDF algorithm. Is that is there another one I'm missing?
It's introduce a strict flag from RDF algorithm, which when set triggers an exception to be thrown when a literal type to access the integer, double, etc., can't be converted to a native JSON type. If the flag is not set, such values will be converted to the expanded object notation from form at value.
All right. It seems like we're conflating two things. One is a strict flag, which checks for representations which are inconsistent with with RDF data, which is inconsistent with a native representation. The other is to actually use the native representation in JSON when confirming it.
Yes,
seems like
you're right.
Two different things.
Probably introduce two flags.
Yeah. Okay. So can we keep that in issue 100? And then, well, let's see. Well, I guess, yeah, or we talk about a different flag.
Yes, I think it's a different flag. It's a two native flag for the from RDF algorithm, which when set causes XSD boolean, XSD integer, and XSD doubled to be represented as native data types. Where the representations are compatible with that.
Use. Can we call it a use native types flag?
Yeah, fine.
Use native represent whatever. We can rename the flag later. Introduce a use native types flag for the from RDF algorithm, which when set triggers. So do we want to trigger an exception to be thrown when the something typed as integer or double can't be converted to a native?
Let's leave that to a strict flag.
Okay, so...
I think in the absence of that, probably it's up to the processors to what to do, and they might use a best effort transformation.
Well, let's see.
For instance... One XSD Boolean is a valid value for Boolean.
Okay.
I think a processor would probably transform that to true and zero to false.
Okay. So introduce a use native types flag for the from RDF algorithm, which when set, which such values are converted, which when set attempts to convert all convert XSD boolean, XSD integer, and XSD double to native JSON types. If the conversion fails, the value will be converted to the expanded object notation form. Let me see if that looks good. Introduce a native use native types flag. Well, you guys can read it.
Yeah.
And that flag should probably by default be set to true, right?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I mean, we just switched it. And this is probably something where Dave Longley wants to jump in because he's the one that suggested doing that.
I think we would want it to be turned on by default.
What's the current behavior? Isn't currently
Up until yesterday, it was on by default.
Okay.
And then it was, and we changed it. So, there's Dave just jumped in.
Yeah, that's basically what we just did, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So did we put in a default?
No. The default value for use native types. Wait, do we want to do that? The default value for use native types.
It's sort of awkward to have a flag whose default value is true. You just have to, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time. Oops, we lost.
Yeah, that's
Mono.
True.
Wouldn't be the first time we'd done that, but. Must be just you and me, Dave.
Hello.
Hi. I presume Mono's coming back.
Yeah, maybe we should rename that flag to keep type literals or something.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it should be use expanded or something like...
Or don't use native.
Expanded types. Natives, something like that. Use native types or don't use native types.
That's kind of strange.
Well, or
don't, I mean, don't.
Expand values, expand native values, set it to true, and we use expansion. And if it's not set or false, then we can use native representations.
I missed part of the discussion just because I got dropped.
I think the idea was saying something like use native types, it defaults to true, is a little bit backwards for flags, because typically the absence of a flag is treated as a false value. And it's not, it wouldn't be the first time we'd done something like that, but it's a little awkward. So if instead we had a flag which was used to get to the unusual case of just using expanded form, then it would be a little bit more intuitive. So the question is, what's the appropriate name for the flag in order to trigger that?
Ah, okay. So we're in full bike shedding mode. Like, let's discuss this off the call. We're out of time anyway, and I think we should be able to come on name hopefully after some offline discussion, or maybe if it comes to one of us in the next day or two, we can post it to the mailing list or IRC. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. One last thing before we go. RDF Working Group and Jason LD. I sent a notice to the RDF Working Group that we believe that the JSON LD syntax is more or less stable. So that kind of triggered them to start looking at the document. I told them we still have some edits to make, but by and large, the document's in pretty good shape. I also sent an email to them stating that I'm finding the links, that we did name graphs support in there. So let me see.
Here's one. I got that one.
Great. And I guess the one went out the previous day. I sent it around midnight, I guess. Status of JSON LD. Was that the name graphs thing?
That first one was the name graphs. This one's the status of JSON LD.
Okay.
One after the other.
Okay.
And you got a response from Sandro,
which I haven't read yet,
on the name graphs. He just doesn't like the use of that graph because now they're the hot new thing is layers.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think the fact is that Sparkle set the ground for graph, and we are really much closer to the idea of graph within data sets.
Right.
And so I think if there was, I don't know if anyone's responded to that, but.
Yeah, I guess.
We certainly don't want to start using layer.
Yeah. I think that we also, throughout the document, we talk about graphs all over the place. Graph of information, you know, linked data graph. We use graphs all over the place. So to have a named graph makes a lot of sense in at least this document.
Yeah,
layer
just that use is incompatible with what that working group is coming around to thinking a graph is.
Well, it's unfortunate because I think it makes a lot of sense. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just because we've just been talking about it in that way, but for a long time, people have been calling these things named graphs or identified graphs or unique graphs or graph snapshots. And I think layer is kind of an interesting way of looking at it, but it's the same problem that we've had with RDF for a long time, is that there's so much terminology that's kind of new to people, and that's, I think that ends up hurting in the long run. Anyway, I'll try and respond to Sandro and see what we can come up with. And we can change it to layer, but I mean, I don't understand. There's no real benefit for doing that. I don't think it's easier to explain it.
Changing it to layer would be silly at this point.
Right.
I think that because there's so much invested in that discussion that neither of us have been involved with, I think it might be useful to try to take it Yvonne in, who has, I think, a better understanding of both sides of this, to see if he can intermediate.
Right. Right. Okay, great. That's it for the call today. Anything else that we should discuss before next week? Okay, light at the end of the tunnel. I think we're close to figuring out the last bits of this API stuff, which will be great.
Great.
All right. Yeah. Have a great week, guys.
You too. Bye.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.